Are you a scaling SaaS founder?
Ready to make the leap from leading a team to leading an organization? Join us each week as we refill your think tank with actionable tips and strategies from great business minds you know and those you don't know yet. This is SaaS Fuel with your host, five-time entrepreneur, SaaS founder, and globetrotting adventurer, Jeff Mains.
Welcome back to the SaaS Fuel podcast, where we're crafting a new customer experience that's as intuitive and engaging as a page-turner novel, keeping them hooked from start to finish. I'm your host, Jeff Mains. I hope B2B SaaS founders like you grow from traction to scale. Here, growth is more than just numbers. It's about crafting a future-proof company, premium valuation, and leaders who build a business of significance while living epic, adventurous lives. Today, we're diving into a critical aspect of product-led growth that can make or break your success. We've had some great guests on the podcast, like Wes Bush, episode 159, and he gave great advice and a framework for doing PLG really well. But what happens when the strategy goes wrong? I actually had this experience recently, and I know that I'm not alone in that. Last fall, as part of our strategic planning process, I was looking for a SaaS tool to create surveys, assessments, and a couple other value adds for our clients, website visitors, and just to get the pulse of the market on relevant issues. Primary research, like I learned from Becky Lawler over at Redpoint Content, that's episode 156 of the podcast. But I found a tool that was perfect. The marketing message was spot on. It was exactly what I needed. And so I put the name of the tool in the project spec and just added it to the backlog. Perfect solution, done, ready to go later on. So Q1 rolls around, this project moved to the front burner. It's time to get it kicked off. The company itself that I picked uses the PLG motion, product-led growth, and it has a 7-day free trial. Cool. So I signed up and I got started, and there's some depth to the tool. It's exactly what I wanted, a lot of customization options. And I knew several of the things I wanted to create and had an outline already. So I get into the tool, and an hour later, I had three things started and zero done. So I started the first one and hit a roadblock. And then I did the next one and hit a roadblock. And the third one, the same thing. And within the tool itself, there were a few basic templates. And like I said, there's a lot that this thing can do. Could certainly fill my need. So a few basic templates, a few examples, but not really what I was looking for. So 2 hours later of just kind of spinning my wheels more, I just set it aside and I'll come back later. So next day, same song, second verse. I hit chat support and I ask him, hey, do you have any examples or templates or something that can kind of give me a jump start? And so they sent me a link to where I'd been before. And so I was like, this is not going to do it. And so I set it aside for another few days and then tried again. And, you know, 2 hours later, total frustration. And it's like, I'm in the middle of my trial here. I was like, I got to do something because I've spent hours on this already and I've got nothing. So a little Google search, did alternative to this tool. I won't tell you what it was, but yeah, I looked at a few competitors and tried another one. Nope, not really. It was really shallow. I looked at four or five more, too expensive, didn't like the pricing model. One had no trial. And then I found one that looked pretty promising. And so I signed up again, another trial. Product-led growth, you know, had some good examples, like 100 templates and several that fit the three projects I wanted to make. And within an hour, all three were done. Another hour, I upgraded, paid, published, and it was a great experience. So what's the lesson here? The key to unlocking explosive growth is not just acquiring new users, but in creating a sign-up and onboarding experience that engages users and drives them to upgrade. What we want to do is get them a win. You get this right and you'll be well on your way to product-led growth domination. But miss the mark and you'll be left with a leaky bucket of inactive users, like I was, and untapped potential without a clear path to success. These users never fully activate and are unlikely to upgrade to paid plans. Since that just leads to poor retention, you know, lack of activation, and honestly, missed growth opportunities because I was ready to buy. And in fact, I did, just not the tool that I started with, that I literally had picked and banked on for like months. So what do we do about this? What does it mean for you? Well, first, simplify the signup process. Get rid of unnecessary friction and make it really easy for users to get started with your product. Collect essential information and provide clear, concise instructions at every step. If it's not something you need to get them a win, skip it and make it till later. Maybe it helps onboarding. Maybe it helps your marketing. Maybe it helps you, you know, how are you going to use it? But unless that affects the user experience, save that for later on. Second is highlight your product's value. Make sure to use that onboarding experience to showcase your product's key features and benefits. Focus there on the benefits. Provide interactive tutorials, guided walkthroughs, real-world examples that demonstrate how your product solves users' pain points. Because that's what we're there to do. We're not there to buy software. We're there to solve a freaking problem. Help us do that really fast. And third, don't give a map. Be the guide. You ever go to a zoo or an amusement park and someone hands you a map at the entrance? Like, all right, cool. You know, the elephants are over here, and lions are over there, and great apes are over there. All right. But have you ever had a VIP experience where you had a concierge or a behind-the-scenes tour? They pick you up, they escort you, they give you helpful tips. They tell you everything that you need to know. They give you some insight, some inside tips, and help you really have a great experience. They know the right order to go in. Think about like an amusement park. They go and you know, get to jump to the front of the line. Give that kind of experience to new users. Don't just hand them a map and say, enjoy. Give them the guided tour. Guide them through. Be the guide. How quickly can you get them to an outcome? In this case, it took me less than an hour, 3 outcomes. And I'm like, I'm in. How fast can you create a win? Because the faster you do it, the faster you earn the upgrade. You know, guides don't have to be in person. I mean, it's product-led growth, right? But identify key activation points and focus value there. Make the wins real, make them measurable, make them valuable. You know, signups are good, but don't let a poor onboarding experience hold you back and make sure that you prioritize this critical aspect of your growth strategy. Make winning easy and watch your B2B SaaS company soar to new heights. In fact, the company I went with, the founder is today's guest. That's how good an experience it was. I didn't even know that at the time. And so it just happened to be that way and work out, which is very, very cool. Our expert guest last week was Asia Arangio from Demand Maven. We talked about demand generation, where companies miss the mark in marketing, and how to identify new growth opportunities. And our founder last Tuesday was Joran Hoffman, founder and CEO of Redditus, a SaaS affiliate marketing platform. We talked about building two sides of a marketplace, product-led growth, and leveraging a large affiliate sales force. Who would like to do that? Well, if you missed either one of those episodes, go back and give them a listen. My guest today is Vlad Gosman, CEO and co-founder of Involve.me, and they are the company that I actually talked about in the opener. They harness AI to revolutionize business forms with automation, personalization, and analysis. With a unique background of spending his first 6 years under communism, he now lives in Vienna. Absolutely beautiful there. Welcome someone who knows how to create PLG wins and did it for me, Vlad Gosman. Hey, Vlad, welcome to SaaS Fuel.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Well, I love your background. Serial entrepreneur. You've done this a couple of times. Tell me a little bit about that background. You're a consulting business, you founded companies, and now about Involve Me.
Sure. So you want me to go way back?
As far as you want to go.
I'll just start by saying that I'm originally born in Romania and I moved to Austria, Vienna, roughly 14 years ago. But my first business venture was in Romania, straight out of college. It was 2007, Romania had joined the EU, and, you know, there was a lot of EU funding available for Romanian companies to get up to the standards of the EU, right? And what I did is I created a consulting company helping them get EU funding. So that was my first touch point with the business world in terms of being a founder. After a few years, I had a chance to exit it, and with a modest amount, I surveyed different countries and wanted to venture outside of Romania. And I picked Vienna after doing a tour with my Volkswagen Golf back then. I did a tour to different cities, which I had picked before, and stayed like 2 to 3 nights in each city. And just to get the vibe of the feel of it. In Romania, I used to live in Bucharest, which is a big city, very yes. noisy. You know, that it's very dense. The density of the population is huge. And a lot of things are chaotic and they don't work. So I wanted to find a polar opposite. And yeah, finally, I stumbled upon Vienna and I thought, like, let's give it a try a few months, see how it goes. And then I'm 14 plus years later and here I am. And in Vienna, I've got acquainted with the nascent startup scene, I would say, at the very early stages. And I got to know a few of the entrepreneurs who, after the dot-com bubble, managed to have some of the more significant exits in Austria in technology. And, you know, I worked on some projects with some of them and co-founded a few companies. A lot of them didn't pan out as expected, but I had a lot of that this happened, yeah. But a lot of learnings along the way. And some were more successful, most notably at Verity, which is a data analytics for the marketing space company, a SaaS tool, more on the enterprise tip. And now, since 2019, I run InvolveMe, which is a bootstrapped SaaS business that me and my co-founders started out of some agency work. And yeah, it's a funny story that I've told a few times, that we started out the company trying to create a content management system for virtual reality. But while building the prototype and realizing that really the market is not ready for this, we started doing some agency work. And out of the work that we've done, we stumbled upon the idea of InvolveMe. And I'm happy to tell more about it as well.
Yeah, tell me about InvolveMe.
Right. So at InvolveMe, we're basically on a mission to make it as easy as possible for businesses to involve their customers in meaningful digital interactions where they can gather valuable zero-party data. And basically how we do this is we leverage no-code and AI to simplify and automate the creation, the personalization, and the analysis of forms for businesses. That's it in a nutshell. And we tackle a lot of use cases across different touch points in the customer journey, from lead gen to onboarding up to measuring customer satisfaction.
That's great. And it is an amazing tool. We actually started using it in a roundabout way. We're looking at a competitor and thought we're going to go that way. And, you know, through some different things, they're kind of missing some pieces. And so I actually went on a search and we found this tool called InvolveMe. I'm like, this is pretty cool. And I started using it. And I didn't even realize that we had talked before and met. But we actually became a customer in between the time when we first met and today, which is pretty cool. I didn't even make the connection until just a couple of days ago.
That is crazy. It's
fantastic tool. It is, right? It's a small world.
That is unbelievable, but very cool.
And a great tool. Yes.
That is nice to hear. That is a great compliment. Thank you.
And so when you think about involving end users or prospects or clients in that process, what does that look like? How did you approach it? And how do you think about doing that going forward?
Right. So when we started it, as I told you, we basically created interactive multi-step forms for capturing customer data as an agency service for a few bigger customers. And out of that, we started automating parts of it and creating the self-serve tool. And then early 2019, we switched completely to SaaS. And we have a sort of a no-touch sales approach. So the way we generate demand with the InvolveMe is basically, on the one side, organic. So we do a lot of content. We've built up hundreds of articles. We have thousands of pages on our marketing website. And I think the interesting perspective there is that we are trying to sketch out the use cases, the business use cases, and create templates for them, and then create guides so that our prospects and users can get a sense of, is this something that I look for that can solve my business use case, but also then rank for specific keywords around those use cases. So that's on the one side. And then obviously we do also some performance advertising, and that's where we're at with Involve Me. And it works well. I mean, obviously we got you to take a look at it.
Yes.
So, and then it's notable to say that it's a freemium tool, right? So when we funnel new users in, we ask a few questions, which you might have answered, or somebody from your team. We get a sense of your size, your industry, where you think of applying Involve Me within your business. And then out of it, we direct you towards a path to certain templates, to a certain sort of category of templates on the one side. But if you want to really get going more easily, you can just apply AI to the process. So even before creating an account, just to see if this is something that goes in the direction of what you're searching for, you can just go to our website and type in your URL, describe the use case that you want to create, select if it's a form, survey, quiz, whatever the type of content is that you want to create, and then just click generate. And basically in less than 10 seconds, we will generate that specific form for the use case with different design variations, with multi-steps, with questions, answers, different form fields, and in the brand design of your own website. So we take also the assets, the fonts, and so forth. And that's all before the login. So you can check, does this tool solve my problem? And then you can go from there. You might decide it's not the one to go, but you haven't gone through a cumbersome registration. But then if you see that it might solve it, then you can just click on use, register, and then you land in our editor and can go from there.
And I think that's amazing just how much you can do even before somebody signs up. I mean, the company name says it all. It's Involve Me. And that's what you want to do. And you're using that with your prospects, where I can go there and you're involving me in that decision and deciding, is this the right tool? And then, you know, your prospects, your clients can use those same things in their business so that their prospects and clients can go and look at that and say, is this the right fit for me? I think it's absolutely a brilliant use case, and the way that you're bringing them in, very different than most of the other companies out there. Was that something that you did intentionally, where you made that available, you know, before somebody has to sign up?
Yes, that was definitely an intentional strategy. We think, like, you know, there's a lot of talk today, Jeff, about, like, I think we've been doing product-led growth from day one before it was a buzzword, for trying to do product-led growth, just by the fact that it's a freemium tool. So,
sure.
So from the get-go, we decided, okay, we want to create some value without charging for it and offer it to a certain segment of users for free forever. So that was our first step towards this direction. And over time, once we started expanding the features, the capabilities, once we started integrated AI, infusing AI at different steps, where we saw, okay, AI can be used to speed up processes, to maybe even automate a few workflows, we decided, okay, we're going to sprinkle AI in the tool. And that was probably roughly 1.5 years ago. And then with that, we defined this first creation step as really a time-consuming endeavor, right? To just create a draft that you can use. If you don't find a template, but you want to, like, really start from scratch, it will take you some time, right, to figure out the editor.
Right.
I would say it is hands down, I think, one of the most user-friendly editors out there. But
very much so, yeah.
Okay, thank you for backing me up. But still, there is a learning curve, right? And the decision was, should we take that as much of that away as possible and then even bring it before the registration? Because it's at that point where users decide, is this tool worthy of my time, right? So does it solve my needs? And we want to get them to that aha moment, to that realization moment as soon as possible, because we don't want to waste their time. And I don't want to fill up, right, the app with users who are dormant and who just signed up because they wanted to realize that the tool, if the tool is working for them or not, and then it didn't and they just stay there. And so if we can take that decision and do it, like make it before the gating, then that's great for me. And I think it was the right decision.
Yeah, it's really interesting, your approach to that, because I think it's opposite what most founders would look at in putting an app out there, especially product-led growth, because they want to brag about how many users they have, how many trials, and just its volume. And so it's about getting them in and then not necessarily activated, but just the idea of if we just have a whole bunch of users in there, then some of them are going to convert. Where you're looking at it differently of if you want the right people in and they already see value when they join. So they have a much, much greater likelihood of conversion, which I think is a very different, very refreshing approach.
Yeah. And thank you. Thinking about it, right, you know, the conventional wisdom is, you know, get them in, get their email address, and then you can activate them, right? So then you'll get the chance to activate them. But from experience, the activation, at least in our tool, would happen during that first or latest second session. But it's like the big cohort is a first session. If you don't get to activate in that first session, then really you can send a bunch of drip campaigns and, you know, email sequences. You won't get most of them back into the tool. So we put that conventional wisdom to the side and said, like, okay, let's show value sooner, right? Let's show straight up before you even enter the tool, right? We don't get your email, but you'll see the value. And if you see the value, you'll convert into a free user and go from there. And actually it's been now a month, I would say. And since we've applied this process and the number of new registrations of free users has doubled.
Wow.
So yeah, so it definitely worked. It actually has proven the point that if they see the value sooner, they will still, or exactly then they will be incentivized to click that button, register the account and go to the editor and start working with the form. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really smart, very counterintuitive. And, you know, what I'm not seeing a lot of in the market, value first and really leading with that value, I think is really smart. And what do you think you've seen in the last month, you know, conversions from freemium to actually paid? Have you seen that increase as well?
Yes, not by the same numbers, but that has increased in the single digits. But I would say that it's too soon to tell you that, because the time for our users to convert from a free user to a paid user, that is usually around the 45-day mark.
Okay.
So it takes some time until they create the content, they set it up within their, I would say, within their marketing and sales stack of tools. You know, we integrate with over 50 different tools natively, additional to Zapier. And then also to integrate it in a specific workflow within their business, and then to publish it and, you know, run traffic to it and, you know, have it out there. So until that all is set up, usually in a lot of cases, it takes then some time. And they can still set everything up and then use it with a trial or with on free. And then while it starts getting traction, upgrade and go from there.
That's a really smart way to do that. Well, what are some key challenges or maybe misconceptions that you had when integrating AI into the creation and analysis of forms and surveys and quizzes and everything that you do.
Right. So I think what we wanted to definitely avoid using it because it's a buzzword and it's nice to have in your tool. So we looked at the whole value chain and defined different points where we said, okay, here it can actually be of benefit. So I said the creation, right? Mm-hmm. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
The creation, right? It takes just a lot of time to learn a new platform, to think of the copy and script everything, right? So having the AI at that step delivering a draft to you in a matter of seconds, that it just cuts down the work time from hours to seconds, which is an amazing productivity boost.
Yes.
The same thing was obvious to us when we looked at analytics and when we looked at, you know, the data that you've gathered, right? You run forms for various use cases and you gather quantitative data. For that, there is analytics. You know, we can show the numbers, deliver charts and all of that when you can dive deeper into them. But in a lot of cases, you also gather qualitative data. So, for example, Net Promoter Score surveys, right? Net Promoter Score surveys have two components. One is the scale. So you get the Net Promoter Score at the end, right, that we can calculate automatically. And then the second step is users have the option to give a free text answer, so qualitative data. Each answer is different. Now, imagine right. You run that at scale and have tens of thousands of data points. Now, it would take tens of hours of sifting through that data, labeling it, doing clusters and seeing like, oh, these answers fit together. How many of them are there? These fit together. How right. many of them are there? What are the conclusions? And so forth. And we said, oh, this is exactly what LLM-based AI can do very well and super quick in doing so. So we created an AI-based report where you, on a click of a button, you can decide also what content to include from a specific form. And it just creates a business report with, you know, the summary of the data, with highlights, with key findings, conclusions, even recommendations of what you can do with that data, depending on the use case that you have. So
and that's a great use case.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer that, but I also want to say that AI, you know, it's moving so fast, and having done now for roughly over 14 years software businesses, I've seen like different, I would say, eras of AI, and it has never been what it is now. So we lived through a completely different time, and it's a shift because AI is table stakes. So, you know, although we've integrated all of these AI features and they are not simple API calls, I would say it's a bit more complex. So we create some workflows with the data, and in some cases use different APIs in one, different AI APIs in one workflow. And we do some number crunching before and after and put stuff together. So, but even then, AI is table stakes because still you don't need to train any models. You don't need to have the processing power within your company. So I would say that I would expect in the next months to years, few years, that most SaaS products and most software businesses will have AI incorporated, and it will not be necessary to point out that it's AI powered or you have AI features, because everyone expects it. It's table stakes.
Right, right.
Yeah.
If you want a ringside seat to what's working now in B2B SaaS and encouragement from fellow SaaS founders, check out Champion Leadership Group. It is the ultimate resource for SaaS founders and C-suite executives like you to continue to develop themselves, scale their companies, and never walk alone on the journey. We're kicking off a new growth accelerator scale up this month, and I would love for you to be a part of it. You've navigated the startup storms and emerged victorious. Now it is time to elevate from success to significance. Zero fluff, just the high impact strategies you need at the right time. We focus on capital efficient growth, profitability that lasts, and achieving the kind of valuation that's not just impressive, but impactful. You'll gain access to a network of peers, custom growth roadmap, and the kind of operational excellence that frees you to focus on what really matters, the SaaS Fuel operating system. If you're ready to turn it up to 11, visit championleadership.com. It is where leaders evolve and companies transform. So there's definitely a lot of change. I've never seen technology move as fast as I have in the last year. And I've seen lots and lots of fast tech trends, but nothing like it's been in the last year and a half, but certainly the last year it's continued to accelerate. What do you think the most exciting trends or developments are in SaaS and AI right now?
That's a tough one, Jeff. I mean, you've been around the block a couple of times, so you know it's very hard to predict where this is going. I'm actually right now starting to read the latest book from Mustafa Soliman, The Coming Wave. And he's one of the co-founders of DeepMind. And I think it's very hard to say where this is going. Where I'm pretty sure is what I mentioned before, is it's exciting to see that it's so easy to use AI within existing tools. I think there is a bunch of new SaaS businesses completely powered by AI that is popping up. But I think for the most part, due to the fact that everyone has the same access to it, right? So there is no differentiator in that. I think that in this case, incumbents, if they move fast, have the upper hand. So, let's say our case, right? If we integrated AI at different touch points, there are still a few areas within the product where I would say AI would just simplify some processes, simplify some workflows, and speed up and automate tasks. We're looking into that. But if you would think of there is an AI first form builder, they would still need to build some of the capabilities that we have, right? They would still need to have that form building capability, at least to edit some stuff that maybe the AI creates first. You would still need to have some of the capabilities around messaging, email, data validation. So an incumbent would have the upper hand, I would say. And the same thing applies to if you think about, email marketing software. You'd still need to have that capability of sending email,
right?
Even if it's AI first. So, but not to say that there won't be any AI first cases. I'm just saying that the AI part is not that big of a differentiator. What I'm excited about, I think, is companies that build the set of tools and picks and shovel businesses, if you will, in the AI race. I think that is an exciting area to look at.
Yes, yes.
So what do you think?
Things that are not technology using technology. Industries that we don't necessarily think about are starting to adopt it. And yeah, I think your point's really interesting that, it just becomes part of the software. And I think it's actually in the coming wave, I want to say, John McCarthy originally invented the term artificial intelligence. But in the book, Mustafa Suleiman talks about, as soon as it works, nobody calls it AI anymore. It's just, you know, software. Right. It, you know, once it's there, once computers can do it, we don't think about it as being AI. We don't give it a term. It's just, you know, what the software does.
Right, right.
And so I think you're right. It just becomes part of what we do, part of our lives. But certainly more and more automation. I think just like in your tool, when somebody goes to the website, what do they want to do? Well, they want to be able to create something. And to do that, well, they need questions, they need design, they need to think about some things. And that's the hard part is, okay, what do I make it look like? Well, you know, I need to do a survey. Here's kind of the topic I'm thinking, but I don't even know what to ask. I don't know how to structure questions. And I could figure it out, but maybe it takes a week. But I can type it in there and just say, here's kind of what I'm thinking. And then within 30 seconds, maybe less, you know, it's already created the survey. It's already created the questions. It's created the options. It's created the design. And you're like, wow, now I'm not staring at just a blank screen with what do I need to do? We've got a really good starting point, and maybe we're 70% done right in 30 seconds of what would have taken a week to get to that point before. And I think that's kind of the power of AI and what we'll continue to see. I think one of the most exciting trends is just the acceleration of those things. You know, I kind of have an idea of what I'm looking for, and I could trial and error and I could get there, but AI can come alongside and help and be that co-pilot. I love that term. And it's the co-pilot of, how about this? Like, that's pretty good. And I can make these changes, and it's not 100%. I think maybe two years down the road, maybe it will be. But we're certainly a whole lot further along using something like that than we would be just staring at a blank screen going, okay, I need to create a survey about, you know, what my clients are thinking about, you know, the macro economy right now. You know, where do they think that's going to be, and how is that affecting their tech investments this year?
Right.
Yeah, AI can certainly give us a good starting point.
No, definitely. I think that's it. The productivity gain is so obvious. And I also think, looking back at, you know, I told you about my failed VR experiment, right? My foray into virtual reality and trying to make a no-code tool for businesses. But, you know, that was another hype, technology hype. And I've seen the 3D printing hype. I've lived through the blockchain hype. And all of these have merits, and they were not completely hot air, but in most cases, they were, the applications of them were over promised, right? So, and right, in terms of this wave of AI, it's not. It's like, I'm looking at our company and I'm looking at marketing growth from the content team that, you know, uses tools from ChatGPT to other SEO tools. It's there. AI is there, and it speeds up their performance. Up to customer support, we use a tool that incorporates AI in support, and we have an AI agent in support that complements our human support team and solves 70% of the first level support tickets by itself without us intervening.
Wow.
And then I look at our development team, and every one of them already for more than half a year are using Copilot, right? One or the other, I won't give like brand names, but you can, you know what I'm sure talking about, right? So, and it definitely speeds up. I mean, a mediocre developer is getting to senior level, and a senior developer can work as multiple people, right?
Yes, yes.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I see it everywhere, right? It's in all departments. It's not only being toyed with, it's being applied, and I can already attest to productivity gains. So that's exciting. That is definitely exciting.
It is. It is. I think that's a fundamental difference too between, you know, blockchain that was kind of ethereal, and I'm supposed to pay for a picture of a monkey because why? You know, NFTs were really hot, and not really understanding, but AI is something that we can interact with, we can use, and we see immediate productivity gains. I think there's a real difference there.
Right.
And blockchain, you know, certainly has its place. Cryptocurrency has its place. NFTs, maybe they do as well.
Right.
I guess we'll kind of wait and see. But yeah, AI is definitely something that we can see gains and value. Anybody can right now. And I think that's a real difference, just being able to wrap our heads around it. What are the lessons did you learn as a founder? I think that's a really good one. You had successes, failures. What are some big lessons you learned?
Right. So many. I think that one of the biggest lessons is that you should not get overly excited with technology for the sake of it. And
that's good.
I'm a product guy, and I get really excited when a new technology pops up and a new trend is here. And I did this a couple of times, as mentioned. I tried creating a marketplace for 3D designs in the 2011-2012 timeframe, when 3D printing was really hot. I looked into VR, you know, blockchain less so, but I definitely was excited. I'm still excited about all of these technologies, and I do think there are a total merits to all of them. My lesson is, though, to focus on the problem rather than being super driven by the love of technology, and to use technology as a tool to solve that problem. And that's where the real business can be made, right? And real, and you can create a real company around it. So that was a tough one and a tough lesson to learn. I also learned that that you can set up a high growth company without institutional money, which also, if you would have asked me like 10, 12 years ago, you know, I've been taught, but that is the way to go, right? So, and my previous endeavors were involving one way or another institutional money, and Involve Me does not. Involve Me is bootstrap. We had a friendly angel round in the beginning, but no institutional money. And yeah, it was an interesting lesson that you can still grow an international company, an international product without that VC backing.
I think that's great. And you're absolutely right. How did you look at bootstrapping versus funding? You know, you've had experience in both. And so what was the thought process going into it? And you know, is this something that you would look at for funding at some point in the future? Or like, hey, we're profitable, growing, we don't need it?
Yeah. So first off, again, looking at the discussions nowadays, they tend to be very binary. It's like two camps. It's the bootstrappers versus the institutional money. And, you know, in the institutional money camp, you rarely hear the founders. You hear VCs maybe, but in the bootstrap camp, you hear founders who are bootstrapping. And I tend to not be in any of those sides, because it's, from my perspective, not a binary thing. So some business models need VC backing, need institutional money to take off and to get to a certain stage. Some don't need it, maybe at the beginning, but might get to a point where they need it as fuel to really scale. So it's not one or the other. I think that's my learning. I think you can do it with, you definitely can do it without. And if I would give myself advice, is if possible, start doing it without, and take it to the point where you feel that really high growth scale can be achieved with a lot of external funding, and then go for institutional money.
I think it's really good advice. And because the further you take it on your own, the better terms you're going to get, the better valuation, the you actually get paid something instead of, giving it all away too early. And I've heard way too many times, somebody has a $50, $70 million exit and the founders got almost nothing because they gave away so much so soon. And that's just sad.
Right. You don't hear about that though, right? You hear about the big ticket exit.
You just hear the tough line number.
Right. The tough line number. Right? Yeah. So yeah, but that is the truth. And also it depends, what is your end goal, right? Do you want to have a working, profitable business? Do you want to have something in the range of an 8-figure recurring revenue business? Do you want it as a lifestyle business? Do you strive for a specific exit and want to retire? Or what is your personal goal? And I think that is interesting to ask yourself. And also, I've been taught several times that you should not ask those questions, that you should focus on the business and make, the business should be a viable thing. But I think you should ask, where do you want to go with it? Like, because at the end of the day, it's you investing at least a decade, right? You read about the overnight successes. I don't know. They are outliers. I don't know anyone personally who has had an overnight success. I know it's been sweat and tears. And I know also a lot of people who have put everything they have in a decade plus marathon, and they came out of the other end without anything. So are you ready to do that, right? And then if that's the case, then you should ask yourself the question, why are you doing it? Because it's such a huge sacrifice, right? And it's not all fun and games. So are you in it for the marathon? Are you in it for the experience? What do you want to get out of it besides the financials and so forth, right? And if you can answer those questions, and you should have answers for those really at the beginning, at the start. And that might change over time and while you're on your path. But it's good to then ask that question again and again while you're on the path.
That's so wise. And there's so much in there. One, in making sure that you're building a company that you want. I've met way too many people that are what I would call successfully stuck. And they're just they're trapped in their own hamster wheel that they created, because if they stop, then the business stops and they're completely, they don't really like the business that they have, but they can't get out either. And so, really making those decisions, what kind of business do you want to build? What is it going to look like? What is life going to look like? And just the concept of, you said lifestyle business, and sometimes those get a bad rap. Mm. Oh, it's not a serious business if it's a lifestyle business. But I think every business that, building an empire and having a great life are not mutually exclusive. Mm. I think we should be doing both of those at the same time. It's not all business and no life, or, all life and then business just kind of does its own thing. I mean, those two things can both be really good.
Right.
And so, but you're right. It starts with deciding what it is that you want. What is this business going to become? And what kind of life do I want to have while I'm building?
Yeah. Yeah. Because completely agree. I mean, at the end of the day, you're doing it for yourself, right? And for your family,
Sure.
And I also have met a lot of people who are trying to emulate something that they've seen or somebody that they've met or somebody that they've read about, right? And then it might sound cliche, but it happens, I think, very often that people do that. And then they realize along the road after, half a decade, I'm trying to be someone that I'm actually not. And I'm trying to accomplish somebody else's goals rather than mine. So don't try not to get there is what I'm telling myself. And I would give as advice as well.
that's a tough realization to spend that much time. And then, I'm chasing somebody else's dream. Mm. That's a tough place to be. We'll wrap up with this. You started in the beginning, you talked about growing up in Romania, just absolutely beautiful country, and then Austria. And oh my gosh, I mean, Romania is beautiful. And then you take Austria on top of that, and the mountains, I mean, it's just absolutely gorgeous. Tell me a little bit about that and just the difference. You grew up, Romania was part of the USSR and then its own independent communist country. And then that changed in 89. You know, what was that like in growing up, you know, communist and then, you know, much more capitalist, much more free market?
Yeah, thank you for that question. That's a great question. I don't talk too often about these things, but, you know, people talk about communism. I have lived my first 6 years in communism. And communism is such a foreign concept to people that they talk philosophically about it, which is great. And I would encourage people to talk about it. And then when I drop in a discussion that I actually have lived in communism, and by the way, it was a very tough communist regime, the toughest in Europe. And it's not me saying that, it's history saying it.
Absolutely.
It's kind of surreal to people, right? So when I mention it, you know, it was, to be frank, it was the first 6 years of my life. So I have glimpses of what life was like. I have memories of, you know, having warm water just for a couple of hours each day, or electricity being turned down for the whole city at 10 p.m. So, you know, this rationing of energy, of food, you know, I can vividly remember that. And everything was unified. People didn't have a lot, but everybody, almost everybody, except like really, really a small elite, didn't have a lot. So they had like really little. So that was unifying, I would say, across the society. And then I saw it during the night, so communism fell in late 1989 in Romania as well. And it was, the fallout of it was as brutal as the whole regime, with the dictator being executed on live television, which is also crazy to even utter. And that's the period when I actually really grew up, right, in like the 90s. And I've seen a society become like Wild West, trying to deal with the new freedoms and not being able to know how to apply these new freedoms, right, and how to manage everything. Now, I think when I go back, I see a lot of things that have improved in Romania, and it's flourishing actually at this. You know Romania as well, and you know, yes, Romanians, and I think it's a beautiful place. It's a place where I still have family, and when I go back, I see it improving at a fast pace. So that's very positive. But then it was a country that was, you know, didn't get its basics right at the time when I lived there. So moving to Austria, the difference was startling, I would say, because in Austria, everything, and even not only in comparison to Romania, in comparison to a lot of countries, in comparison to the US, in comparison to a lot of other countries, Austria has its shit together. Sorry for cursing. So has gotten it straight. So I think in Austria, things are working at the base level, and then, you know, they've managed to build on top of that. So yeah, I think there are tons of differences, but I couldn't pick a favorite. I would say I feel now at home here, definitely, especially since it's the place where, you know, I created a family of my own. So yeah, then it's this what I call home, for the time being, at least.
That's awesome. 14 years. That's a while. It's a beautiful place.
It's true. Yeah.
Well, where can people learn more about you and about Involve Me Online?
Sure. So it's in the name, involve.me. You can find all about what we do there on our website. As I talked with Jeff about, you can try out the product even without logging in, at least parts of it. And you can connect with me on LinkedIn. Find me probably in the show notes, hopefully.
Exactly. We'll definitely link both of those in the show notes and, of course, you know, social. But we actually created a team alignment survey. And so you can kind of see how well your SaaS team is aligned. And so we'll put that in the show notes as well, if people want to go take a look at that and actually see what it looks like from the other side. But everybody should go sign up and try it out for sure, because it is an amazing tool.
Thank you. That's so awesome to hear. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Vlad, great conversation today. Thanks for being on SaaS Fuel.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the opportunity and thanks for having me.
Thanks again, Vlad, for coming on the show and sharing your journey and insights. You can learn more about Vlad and Involve.me at, you guessed it, Involve.me. All links, highlights, resources, and full show notes are available at sasfuel.com. And be sure and check out our YouTube channel as well. Full episodes, video shorts, training, outtakes, and quite a bit more. If this episode made you think, share it with someone who loves a good brain teaser. Let's get those mental gears turning. Everyone who shares this week gets a victory vibe amplifier. It boosts the frequency of your users' wins, making sure every triumph resonates loud and clear, leaving a lasting echo of success in the minds of your new signups. Be careful because it might cause an explosion of activations. Join us Thursday on our SaaS Fuel Expert Series for a pretty technical episode where my guest is Sandy Riza. He is the lead engineer on the Dagster project. It's an open source data orchestration platform used in machine learning ops, ML ops, data science, IoT, and analytics. And the next Tuesday, 1 week from today, we have founder John Conafe, U.S. Air Force veteran and CEO of Integrate. He has a rich background as an employee at three space unicorns and is now building Integrate. Pretty cool stuff. I will see you next time. And as always, enjoy the journey.
Thanks for listening to SaaS Fuel. Full show notes for each episode, which includes a summary, key takeaways, quotes, and any resources mentioned, are available at sasfuel.com. Be sure to follow and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're enjoying the content and getting value from these episodes, please leave us a rating and review at ratethispodcast.com/SaaS Fuel. We'll be sure to read these out on future episodes. Let's go!